what actually happened. On Monday, April 8th, the U.S. Commerce Department announced that it's going to award the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, also known as TSMC, it's going to award their U.S. unit a $6.6 billion subsidy for advanced semiconductor production in, drumroll, Phoenix, Arizona.
But this has broader implications for the entire world. I mean, all these chips are being right now being manufactured in Taiwan, and we know the pressure that that company is feeling from China. Let's say that we never achieve AGI. We never achieve ASI. Like, these things are just pipe dreams. What we have today is still enough to cause massive disruptions with agents. If we just improve our capabilities of like manifesting, but creating these agents to all communicate and work together, that still improves workflow automation to where we're displacing a large majority of people. Now, the key thing here that I want to talk about is the word resistant. Now, just because something is resistant doesn't mean that you are safe. Anybody that's in crypto has a bias just because they invest in it and they believe in it. They have money behind that piece of technology.
What if that's a distinctly human characteristic, the propensity for violence? What if it's possible to train robots and computers and all the this technology to only embody the best of humanity?
Welcome to Humanity Unchained, a show about the future of life reshaped by artificial intelligence. From practical insights on upskilling to existential talks about immortality, no topic is off limits. Welcome to the future with your hosts, Julia McCoy and Jeff Joyce.
Hello, hello, everybody. Hey. I'm Jeff Joyce. I'm here with my awesome co-host.
And I'm Julia McCoy. Great to be back here with you all.
Yeah, it's awesome. Today we have a very special episode. We're going to be talking about things like TSMC opening a facility here in Phoenix, Arizona. We're also going to be talking about your most recent YouTube video, Julia, going through some of the comments. We talk about like Bitcoin and stuff. It should get a little fiery. And then at the end of this episode, we have an awesome conversation with Cam, and we'll be able to introduce him and go through that discussion. And to kick us off, I immediately want to go right into talking about TSMC. Let me go ahead and share my screen real quick.
Yeah.
All right. Can you see my screen?
Sure can.
Perfect. This article is titled TSMC Wins $6.6 billion in U.S. Subsidy for Arizona Chip Production. And Julia, I know that you did a deep dive into this. So if you want to go ahead and kick that off.
Yes. Yes. Well, this is pretty record-breaking stuff that just happened Monday, April 8th. Pretty amazing to, I mean, even be able to look at a piece of news this massive for the economy, the United States, merging with other technology in other countries. I mean, we're just looking at something that's going to put us leaps and bounds ahead on the map when it comes to AI and technology. So what actually happened? On Monday, April 8th, the U.S. Commerce Department announced that it's going to award the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, also known as TSMC, it's going to award their U.S. unit a $6.6 billion subsidy for advanced semiconductor production in, drumroll, Phoenix, Arizona, and up to $5 billion in additional loans. TSMC is also going to expand the investment by $25 billion up to $65 billion. And they're going to build up to 3 Arizona fabs by the year 2030, including producing the world's most advanced 2-nanometer technology at the second Arizona fab, which will start production in 2028. And the most amazing thing about this, to me, Jeff, well, there's several things. First of all, the job growth this is going to add to the Arizona economy. So the U.S. Commerce Department is expecting that these projects are going to create 6,000 jobs in direct manufacturing and 20,000 jobs in construction. And the city will be working with 14 direct TSMC suppliers to expand the plants. And what's really cool is that these chips, which will be developed in the tens of millions, are going to power 5G, 6G smartphones, autonomous vehicles, AI data center servers, And they're going to support key customers like Apple, NVIDIA, AMD, Qualcomm. So we're going to see world-leading stuff happen right here in Phoenix, Arizona for this future of tech with AI. And it's just amazing to see this happen. You know, of all places, Arizona, the desert just got a lot hotter because the best AI chips are going to come out of Phoenix. So I just think this is incredible. I think, you know, for one, we made news across the world because this is the first time that we've seen a partnership like this happen across nations in a brand new vertical, which, you know, AI itself, it's a whole brand new vertical for companies this big to have this much growth and partnership in. But I'll hand it back to you, Jeff. I mean, it's really exciting, you know, that we're both here in this Mecca of Arizona and that we can see this, be a part of it. And not only that, but, you know, we're also celebrating the fact that our founder, Justin, just signed a lease to open our own headquarters in Scottsdale. So I just think this is perfect timing where we get to see these three fabs that are going to be producing tens of millions of AI chips powering the future. We get to live in the same exact vicinity. Anything you'd add to this?
Yeah, I mean, Arizona is definitely set up right now to become a, kind of like this AI tech hub of brilliant innovation, awesome chip manufacturing. We're able to supply the world's chips straight out of our own backyard, which is just phenomenal. But this has broader implications for the entire world. I mean, all these chips are being right now being manufactured in Taiwan, and we know the pressure that that company is feeling from China. And so with China constantly threatening to invade Taiwan, we're going to be way better off having our own chips developed here inside the country. And that also opens us up to a ton of possible trade agreements that we can then establish with other countries that want to participate in this technology. I think this is nothing but good things going forward for this.
And I also have to add a head nod to one of my favorite stories of all time and a movie that is now, I'll take a bet on this, surpassing Star Wars in the value and the monetary results it's going to bring through the visionary producer, Denis Villeneuve. So that movie is called Dune. That story is called Dune by Frank Herbert. You know, it's set in the desert, right? There's this group of people called the Freemen who learn and understand how to live in the desert and have advanced tech like underneath the sand. And they just, it's incredible to watch the whole story. I won't give you spoiler alerts here, but something that TSMC is doing with its Arizona factories is very much Dune-like. It's going to achieve a 90% water recycling rate. It's putting together in design right now a water reclamation plant that has a goal of achieving near zero liquid discharge. So talk about recycling and not adding waste while you're building something as massive as these three fab centers. I mean, that is so incredible. And it just reminds me of Arrakis and Dune and the Freemen and some of my favorite stories in fiction. So, you know, whether we see the CEO of one of these companies come out riding a sandworm would just delight me to no end. So I hope we see that. If not, it might be me. Just saying.
Sorry, I lost it. Riding a sandworm. All right. Yeah, this is incredible news. I think that we're going to see a ton of innovation in the space, especially in Arizona. I cannot wait. And water is a huge problem here. I mean, we've had droughts. We've had tons of issues with water. So, I mean, the more the companies pick to build here, I mean, the more the water becomes more important. So being able to have that in mind when creating these facilities is important. So let's go ahead and dive into our very next topic, where I wanted to go into your YouTube video, and I'm going to allow you to kind of just talk about that and kind of set this up. If you could just give us a rundown of what the video was about and kind of what you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. So if y'all aren't aware, the show, of course, that you're listening to is Humanity Unchained, and we have our own YouTube channel for that under the handle at Humanity Unchained Podcast. But one thing that I've done throughout the last 10 years is YouTube, but in the last 3 months, I have pivoted my channel at Julia McCoy, just this, my straight name at Julia McCoy, to 100% focus on AI. Now, that said, I think it's very important. I'm going to get on a soapbox for a minute. I think it's very important that creators don't just jump on a topic to get virality. And that is not what I did. I instead kind of hunkered down, spent the last year working full time in AI with the Content at Scale team, learned so much working with brilliant people that add perspectives that I personally have never heard in any book, on any news channel, on any YouTube video. Some of those perspectives have come from Jeff, has come from Justin, has come from Simon. So I've heard some brilliant things, and I've put in thousands of hours on my own time in the last year to read and listen and learn from physicists, MIT professors, researchers, scientists, computer scientists, futurists, you name it. I have just gone down that rabbit hole of learning. So that's really important. You know, I don't believe in just jumping on a topic and spewing information out, because I just think that will lead you down a path where you burn out very quickly. Things that you do and you create should be from a place if you really care and you enjoy talking about this. So when I pivoted my channel this early spring 2024, it felt right. It was the right time to start talking about AI because I had spent a year researching this. I didn't just jump on a trend. So in the last, 3 weeks, actually 2 weeks, and keep in mind, I've been YouTubing for 10 years. I've put over 350 videos out. In the last 2 weeks, I've had more impressions, more views, more comments by probably 1,000 times than I've ever had on any video to date. The video I put out 2 weeks ago, which was my first major pivot into AI, and it talks about life after AGI. It ranks number 3 for a single word keyword, AGI. And it's, my goal was that it was one of the most informative videos out there on the topic. So that result, that video was the result of thousands of hours of learning. So when I put that video out, as of 2 weeks, it's surpassed 500,000 impressions in YouTube, 51,000 views, and it's nearing 1,000 comments. It blew up. Well, a day ago, I released the next video on AGI, and it's all about how to prepare your mindset. It's resources, books, and it's breaking the common thread that you hear on quote unquote AGI preparation. So it's counter mainstream. And it's the result of, again, like a lot of thought and books that I've read. So that video surpassed the other video by about 5x in the first hour. My other video had 50 views in the first hour. This one had 500 views in the first hour. So that's a 10x, not a 5x. And it has continued to just take off. I think we're almost at 10K views now. So that video is what Jeff is looking at here on screen. And that's called How to Prepare Yourself for AGI. And it's just, in short, it's a summary of when you type that phrase in Google, you find a lot of fear-based narrative because, you know, fear creates more click-through. It creates more results. And that's why news networks tap into clickbait. But that's really not the future we should be looking ahead to. We should be looking ahead with a lot more hope, because I think that's a more realistic future. If you look at how the world works in ways of abundance. You know, consumption creates more abundance, not the opposite. Population creates more abundance. So the world works that way. And that's what I talk about in this video. But I'll hand it back to you, Jeff, to talk through some of the comments.
Absolutely. So just scroll down here and we're simply kind of list these out. And if we have any key points, we'll talk about them. So the first one I see here is the chances of this going well with the way governments and companies behave is very, very small. And that is kind of true, but I also think that that's like a very narrow way. If you only look at the negative of AI, it's very easy to just be like, oh yeah, everything's going to go bad. It's doomsday.
Well said. If you click on my reply, Oh my gosh. Look, the reply to the reply. Oh boy, first time seeing that. But I was like, yeah, you're not wrong. But, you know, I think that what we can do right now, because we're at a place, we're at a very unique place in time and space and history where this can go one way or the other. And we'll talk about that even more with Cam, who we have coming on the show later. But, you know, there's kind of like this new birthing territory that we're in right now. And we see people like Iman Mustaq stepping down from Stability AI to help build legislation and rules that can govern AGI. And we see, I think, the potential of this to go right. Yes, it can also go wrong because a lot of governments, a lot of countries are driven by wrong values, not good values, anti-humanity. That is part of their value system. So if that's who governs the AI, then yeah, we're in a lot of trouble, but that doesn't have to be who governs the AI, right? And that's what we have to remember. Like, we're still in a place where there's a lot of hope. And I think if we just look at it from the negative perspective, oh, there's no hope, then we don't really follow human nature, because human nature relies on hope. And if you look at history, the hope for a better future has often propelled that very better future. So we got to hold on to that as a human race. We can't let go of hope.
Absolutely. So this next comment also kind of got to me. It's from Nico Kuhn. I think we're at a critical time where people need to wake up and start demanding major change. If we're going to ensure the best outcome, there needs to be a large movement to push for kinds of economic changes that will be necessary. Though I fear most people will try to ignore the problem until nearly the entire middle class is crumbling. I think we should be demanding policymakers to implement things like AI dividend for AI for all, to ensure that everyone benefits from AI, even if they lose their job to it and struggle for a while. I think that this comment really resonates with me in the sense of, like, we need a form of UBI. We need a form of just taking care of the people that AI impacts. And it is going to impact everybody. Let's say that we never achieve AGI. We never achieve ASI. Like, these things are just pipe dreams. What we have today is still enough to cause massive disruptions with agents. Mm-hmm. If we just improve our capabilities of, like, manifested, but creating these agents to all communicate and work together, that still improves workflow automation to where we're displacing a large majority of people. And then once robotics gets into play, we're still at that point replacing a ton of people. So even if, like, the best case scenario for jobless replacement is that we never achieve AGI, we are still at the tipping point, and we've already passed over that, of this just being like a complete disruption. So I think that anybody that thinks otherwise, you just need to look at what these are capable of now and what those small changes coming up this year are going to actually do. I say small just because in the grand scheme of things, when you think about what AGI is capable of in ASI, it is going to be a very small, minor change. But just the inclusion of agents that are autonomous are going to completely revolutionize the way that we work.
Yes. Yeah. Somebody in the comments actually said, well, several people were like, oh, thank you for bringing up the singularity. You know, nobody talks about that enough. And then some people in the comments were like, we have already entered the singularity. There is no turning back. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. We have entered the age of acceleration. None of this is stopping. There's no putting a brake on it. So the question is, how can we steer it? Where can we go? And one point I made in this video, and I'm actually talking to people in the comments now that are thinking about taking my advice. What? One point I made in the video was, why don't you go try to work in AI right now? Like, look for the company you can pitch and work for, because AI needs bright minds. It needs people working in that field. I mean, take it from Jeff and I, right? Jeff left a video agency he started. I left a writing agency I started. We're both working inside the future, actually building an AI platform, which is leading us to more work in AI. So I think, like, that's something to consider here, is don't just sit by. Like, if you have something to say, something to add to this, a tool to experiment with, do it.
Absolutely. This is another common comment that I see. It's like a sentiment. You mentioned that it's likely we'll see AGI in our lifetimes. Personally, I don't see how we reach it in the next decade, and likely the next 10 years or less. Would love to know when you expect AGI to come to fruition. Now, here's the thing that people kind of don't pay attention to is that the rate of acceleration of AI is 10x every 6 months. Mm-hmm. That is one aspect of it. The next aspect of it is that new chips are coming online consistently. We just had recently a NVIDIA keynote that we watched with NVIDIA releasing new chips, all specializing in AI, that are vast improvements over our previous technology. This is going to improve the compute that we have. And the more compute that we have, the more likely we're going to see innovations with AGI and ASI. Mm-hmm. Now, Microsoft recently spoke with OpenAI and they came to an agreement to open another facility. And they're basically funding them to create a massive data center, all with the sole purpose of just improving their AI technology, which we understand with AGI is that more compute equals AGI. That's literally the problem that we have right now. We need to solve the compute problem. And so once that happens, we will then have AGI. So it could be that in 2029, we do see a form of AGI. I know that a lot of people are saying that AGI is going to come right now. I'm not necessarily thinking that. I think that we'll start to see semblances of what AGI could be within the next like maybe 8-9 months with the forms of like agents coming more into play. And we'll start to get a better understanding of what AGI is because we'll be able to improve workflows to a degree to where it kind of resembles AGI because we'll be able to do the work better than most humans. Now, but I still think the true AGI definition is still a little ways out. Do you have any thoughts on that, Julia?
Yes. Well, I like how this person, you know, left a comment as if I could totally and completely predict the future, much like Merlin. So, when do you expect AGI to come to fruition, Julia? Well, let me tell you. Really, it's all just speculation. I think what's interesting is to hear what other people say, like this comment you just expanded, Jeff, which is also very thoughtful. You know, it depends on how you define AGI. So some people say AGI is here already. We have a level of it. I think we have pieces of it, but we don't have the full thing, or we would see even greater leaps and bounds. We could literally deploy AGI if it was here right now. We could deploy it to go uncover a new source of energy. And I'm telling you, in a minute, it would come back figuring out the world's energy problems. It would have it solved. That's AGI. It's not here yet. And it's interesting. I don't know if we will have this person listening to this episode. I would bet we will. So this person knows who they are, but somebody that I very much respect actually believes we won't see AGI at all in our lifetime. And that shocked me because this person is working full-time in AI. I was like, what? You really believe that? And this person won't come on the show, you know, because they don't speak on stage. So it's just crazy because I think, you know, there's so many points of views here that have to be taken into consideration. And are we coming at this from a place of imagination? Or are we coming at this from a place of cognitive bias? Or are we coming at this from a very objective place? And it's going to be very hard to predict, I think. So my final answer is, I don't know.
Right. And I've been thinking a lot about what I think that AGI is. And I think that my ultimate definition of it is an AI system that is able to answer a question or solve a problem that would take years for a human to do in an automated fashion, or solve a problem that a human would never be able to achieve in their lifetime. I think that is an excellent definition of AGI. Now, an ASI would be the leaps and bounds above that. That's probably when we start to think about like things like consciousness for AIs. But I think that that is a definition of AGI that I'm comfortable with. And I think that we will see that in our lifetime. But now it's very hard to speculate like when exactly all these things are going to unfold because nobody has a definitive answer on that. We're all just guessing.
Well, you can find on YouTube a definitive headline that says AGI will be here in September of 2024.
Right. And you see that all the time. I mean, you see clickbait videos just being like, yeah, AGI is coming this year. And it's like, well, I mean, if you're defining AGI as just like being the thing that's like marginally better than ChatGPT, I mean, sure. Yeah. I mean, cool. Yeah. That's AGI. But no, I think that time compression of solving problems is one huge indicator for me of what AGI should be considered. Like that would be a good definition for me on what AGI is.
I agree. I mean, that agrees with the scientific perspective. It's 1,000 levels above human abilities. We can literally deploy it to go figure out the world's problems, and it will in a minute. That's AGI. So yeah, we don't have that yet. Definitely don't.
So this next part, this is where we're going to get a little bit heated a little bit. So we have people starting to talk about Bitcoin. And yes. Julia, do you just want to kind of touch on what your stance was on Bitcoin before I start reading these comments?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a very counter mainstream opinion on Bitcoin that I, to date, as of recording this podcast with you right now, Jeff, I have not heard this in any other YouTube. And instead, I've heard the complete opposite. And I've left comments and I've asked people, why do you believe this when this can occur? And I've not gotten a response at all. So this is pretty incredible and crazy to me. My belief, and this comes from spending time with AI experts and living around these amazing people and hearing what they're saying, like Jeff and our team. My belief is that Bitcoin will be rendered useless. Cryptocurrency will be de-encrypted when quantum computing and AI becomes AGI, when quantum computing is out, because those advancements will render encryption totally useless. And Bitcoin mining itself won't even be needed or necessary. It's just completely rendered void the minute quantum computing gets out, because quantum computing in a second, in a fraction of a second, can solve any kind of cryptography and de-encode anything. And so I think that the blockchain is not as strong as people represent, because again, nobody is even expanding on that as a problem. I don't hear it in interviews. I don't hear that problem raised at all. So that is what I said in this video, to the point where I was like, I sold my Bitcoin. I got out of it because I don't see it as a secure financial currency of the future. So Jeff, I'll bounce it back to you, because people were like, well, I had two point of views in the comments. I had people saying, Julia, don't ever give financial advice. And they kind of spoke down to me and they were jerks. So that was one. And then the other perspective was, thank God, at last, a video on AI without the Bitcoin bro.
Right. You know, we had a conversation in Texas about this, because when I first started getting into AI, I was very interested on how AI would kind of impact cryptography. So I thought it was very, very interesting. And my consensus from all my research was that it will, like you said, decrypt most modern day encryptions. Now, there are things that are being put into place with, let me actually find a comment so that we actually give credit to the person that sparked this whole thing. This was kind of the epicenter of the whole crypto bro movement. Now, I want to preface this by saying that I had Bitcoin, and I sold Bitcoin when I got into AI because I saw the AIs and disrupt Bitcoin. And if you believe, and this is not financial advice, do your own thing, do your own research, then make your decisions. But if you believe in AI and you believe in quantum computing, then the natural progression from that thought process is that to understand that cryptography then becomes almost obsolete, and it's always a cat and mouse game bouncing back and forth between new encryption methods and AI and quantum computing solving those encryption methods and then decrypting that encrypted messaging. So that is just one aspect of it. And there's a second point to this that I'm definitely going to dive into, but let's dive into this comment. Keep talking about AI. Stop talking about finance, Bitcoin. You clearly don't have a clue what you're talking about, and you're giving very bad advice. Bitcoin, as long as there are and will be a monetary system, is the only hope for humanity. That's not true. There's plenty of other storages of money, like gold and real estate and so forth, that you don't need to rely on Bitcoin for. Now, it is decentralized. I did root for it. That was an excellent piece of technology. This is before the advent of AI and quantum computing. So stop talking nonsense about quantum computing and the risks to Bitcoin. Now this comment goes on, and they're basically just adding opinion to this.
You should know better.
And so one of the things that came about from this discussion was somebody, I'm very glad that somebody brought up, somebody said, you crypto bros are a real cult. somebody brought up the whole idea of this post-quantum resistance cryptography. Mm-hmm. Now, let me go ahead and share this tab. Make sure that you guys can see it. Cool. So NIST is a company that, it's an organization that basically creates the standardizations for all cryptography. They're behind most of our modern day cryptography, and they held a 6-year competition to kind of come up with this post-quantum resistant cryptography algorithm. They had 4 different candidates. This was in 2012. Now, the key thing here that I want to talk about is the word resistant. Mm. Now, just because something is resistant doesn't mean that you are safe. And the thing about it is that quantum computing, at the current scale of quantum computing, it's very easy to be like, well, it might take quantum computing some time for it to be able to decrypt most of the encryptions that we have. I mean, sure, that's fine, but it's literally doubling like every year in qubits, and we haven't even figured out the process yet of combining AI with quantum computing. And once we do that, it's game over. Even if you have a lattice-based encryption or cryptographic algorithm, that is still has a possibility of being decrypted, because when you create encryption, you also create decryption methods. And so anytime that we have an AI that learns about these methods, it's going to find new ways to basically solve that decryption problem. So quantum computing being able to then speed up the amount of time that it takes for it to solve these problems for an AI would be awesome, because what quantum computing is an excellent fact checker. It can fact check better than any computer system that we have to date. Now, there are instances where computers that we have now are kind of superior in the way that they handle certain things, but quantum computing, as far as like factual information, is very, very, very good. So when you combine that with AI systems, that then becomes a kind of governance over what the quantum computer should do. It is basically checkmate for all cryptographic algorithms that we have in the future. So it'll constantly be like, oh, we had a breakthrough. We used quantum computing to establish a new encryption algorithm based on blah, whatever it is. Well, on the very opposite side of that, all the AI has to do is learn that encryption method and brute force its way to figure out what it's going to do to decrypt that. And there you go. It's decrypted. And so there's no perfect randomization in math. Like everything in math is factual. There's no perfect randomization. So whenever you think about it from that perspective, all it takes is for quantum computing and an AI system to really understand the mechanics behind the equations in math in order for it to solve virtually anything. So that is my rant on Bitcoin.
I hope you guys were listening, because that was like a masterclass. I'm telling you what, like, you aren't going to hear these perspectives really from anywhere else. And if you are, and if you know more than what Jeff just explained, please, please send us an email, Jeff at continentscale.ai, Julia at continentscale.ai, because we'd love to have you on the show. We'd love to have you talking about this. Personally, I can't find, Jeff, anyone that has a valid argument against all the points you just raised.
Right.
It's crazy.
And it's just two sides of different arguments, right? Like, there's going to be people that believe, and this is fine. Even mine is a belief pattern. Like, I understand that I have bias because I'm in AI and I saw the potential of AI. So my bias is understanding that technology and being like, well, this is my conclusion based off that. Anybody that's in crypto has a bias just because they invest in it and they believe in it. They have money behind that piece of technology. And so they're going to have certain opinions, and those are completely fine. But it's one of those things that where, like, if I'm going to store my money for long periods of time, which is what you want to do with Bitcoin, we want to invest into it and sit on it. I don't think that is a proper storage of capital going forward, knowing that we are on the cusp of a massive breakthrough like AI and quantum computing, I think that there's way better ways to invest your money besides this. Once again, this is not investing advice. Do your own research. I'm not a financial advisor. But it's just my personal opinion on it. I think that now I could be wrong. I could absolutely be wrong. That's a possibility. But
and if Jeff is wrong, we'd love to have you on the show. Prove Jeff wrong.
but I don't believe that at this moment in time that I can be proven wrong until we experience it. And on the opposite side of that too, is that I can't prove anybody else wrong until we go through that. That is the fact matter. But from what I understand and what I know, I am betting against Bitcoin and most of these cryptographic algorithms that are being developed because of these two factors. The second factor that I want to get into very, very quickly, I know that we're for time, we're kind of going over, but is social engineering with AI when we talk about private keys. This is another common argument. Well, we still have our private keys. Well, we've already seen billions of dollars being stolen by people using very clever, sophisticated AI systems to then create deep fakes, to create social engineering projects, to then steal money
from people.
And now we're going to see this on a massive scale once more systems come online, once more AI technologies are out in the public that are open sourced, that people that can then manipulate into doing their bidding on however they want. Your private keys are only as safe as you are knowledgeable. So if you're aware that you can be stolen from and what to look out for, awesome. That's why you should listen to this podcast. But if you're not aware of it, you're going to be susceptible to these kind of social engineered AI hacks, per se, on your personal being, to where people would actually be able to extract that information that they want from you, which will be things like your private key. So those are the two fronts for AI disruption in Bitcoin. And there, one last thing, there was another comment that said that, let me see if I can find it really quickly. But you got so many comments on this video.
I know, hundreds.
I'm like trying to find it. Oh well, I guess it doesn't matter. We'll save that for a future episode. But I mean, invest in Bitcoin at your own will, like whatever you want. But just for me personally, I'm staying clear of it. I don't think it's a good way to store your money.
Yeah, same here. I'm steering clear of it too. You know, I was definitely a Bitcoin fan. Huge fan. I mean, I love the decentralized argument. I love moving away from the fiat currency, but I don't think that cryptocurrency is it. I really don't. Just like Jeff sees with what's coming, I've done my own research apart from Jeff, and I see the same thing. I see quantum computing rendering that null and void, and I don't see really any way around that, especially as AI, AGI, ASI, and all of these leaps forward continue to happen. I don't see it. I don't see cryptocurrency being what we're going to use. That said, I think, you know, it is important to not also put all your stock in the dollar. I don't think that's the most excellent fiat currency. All kinds of problems there too. But I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't put in cryptocurrency. I've definitely pulled mine out and trying to avoid a loss, because we're just accelerating so quickly into the future. You know, this could change at any second. And then, you know, quantum computing's here. Your computer's a million times faster. Your phone's 10 million times faster. And all of that Bitcoin mining you're making money from is now worth zero. I mean, that would be a really scary situation. So it's just important to do your own research, be aware and informed. And I think Jeff explained it the best I've heard, especially on this podcast episode. So, I mean, if you want to listen to this again, I would absolutely encourage you to, and listen to the counter arguments about cryptocurrency. Look for anyone speaking about crypto as it relates to quantum. I haven't found anything. People avoid that argument. So it's just interesting to me, you know, to see what's mainstream. And just like Jeff said, there's usually some kind of subjective tie-in, because that person speaking on stage does actually represent some kind of wallet or currency in the crypto space. And so there's direct monetary ties there. So do your own diligent research here. You know, be an autonomous thinker. That's what I talk about on my YouTube channel. That's the best way to prepare yourself really for what's coming. Is don't let any narrative, not even ours, be the only narrative you believe. Do your own thinking. Be a critical thinker. So I think that's a great note to move into the next part of our episode with Cam Snow. So we will cue that up. Let's jump into that part. All right. So we are joined in the second half of the show by Cam Snow, a connection of mine who is a copywriter, content creator, and just somebody who's really smart and has been standing out on my feed. So we invited him here to Humanity Unchained to share a little bit about his perspective and just add that third voice to our show, which we're going to continue to do with multiple guests. Cam, tell us a little bit about your background, what you do.
That's a great question. So I am a, as you said, I'm a copywriter. I own a copywriting agency called Leads for a Lifetime. And our whole thing is like done for you management of email, but really we kind of think about it as like the CMO, but just for your organic marketing, because I don't want to touch the paid stuff. So that's, we tend to work with like coaching, consulting companies, but you know, there's always a few super random industries in there. And I've been doing this since, in some ways I've been doing this my whole life because I grew up in the marketing world, just in the political marketing world. I worked in politics for 6 years, and then I came into the online marketing space in 2016, and I've been bopping about ever since. And oh, the authority metrics that people want to know is I've generated like $15 million in revenue just from my copy, blah, blah, blah.
I love it. Blah, blah, blah.
It's not important. Don't worry about it.
Nobody cares. Yep. I don't care.
Well, Jeff, yeah. Would you like to kick it off with the question that we have for Cam and just kind of a roundtable discussion? I'll pass it over to you to kick that off.
Absolutely. So I think the main thing we want to talk about today are is do you think that machines will either become sentient or possess elements that like constitute having a soul? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, let's just start with a nice, easy question.
You have to get right into it.
So, okay, I'm going to go in a roundabout way. The first thing that comes up is, have you guys seen Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix?
I think I watched like the first season. Okay. So I believe there's multiple seasons now.
There's like three seasons now. Yeah. And I think the one I'm thinking of is in the first season. And so spoiler, it's been out for like 4 years. So if you haven't seen it, too bad. It's like the last episode is kind of this narrative style where this guy is kind of like narrating his life and his vision and kind of like his philosophy. And he's like this tech millionaire in the setting. He's telling the story of his life, but the setting is that he's invited his entire community to come to his house and like witness his next big trick, whatever the big trick is. Nobody knows. Like that's the mystique. Well, throughout the whole course of this little short, you discover that this billionaire dude is actually not a human. He's actually a robot. And he actually started his life as a pool cleaning robot. And so the trick at the end is that he devolves back into a pool cleaning robot at the very end of his like centuries long life. So when I think of that, I think of like this whole idea of a robot ascending into some form of human consciousness. So I think my definitive answer is maybe. Like I think it's possible for robots to get to a place where we've crossed the uncanny valley and we're now in a place where at the very least it's mimicking those motions so well that for all intents and purposes it might as well be real. And I could absolutely see a movement springing up as we've seen in a lot of sci-fi films and TV shows to be like, hey, like we can't treat these robots who look and feel and sound like us as a subhuman species, even though technically they are. Like, it's going to blur the lines for sure, but I think it's inevitable in some ways.
I absolutely agree with that. And the fact of the matter is, like, is that we don't even have proper definitions in place of like what we think like consciousness actually is. Like, we kind of understand what consciousness is, but we don't have like definitive proof of anything. And so if we're making that, we're making an assumption that robots can't achieve that level of consciousness that we have, it feels kind of, I don't know, naive in my opinion. It's like, I think that with enough compute, just like you were saying, that we'll have robots to simulate so well human emotion that we just, it is indistinguishable. It's like, they might as well be sentient. So when that when that will come, I have no idea, but.
And that's what you said there, Jeff and Cam too. I think it's really important, simulation. I think that simulation of this will get so good that we really won't be able to tell the difference between a conscious human and a conscious looking robot. But we have to remember what actually has a soul. And that's where it comes back to for me. Does a robot actually have a soul? It comes from a set of algorithms. Only a human is born with a soul, right? So that's the division for me. But will machines look, feel, breathe, sense, respond as if they're alive? Absolutely. Have you seen, talking about TV, have you seen, either of you seen the film called The Creator? Came out a couple of years ago.
Oh, that sounds kind of familiar.
It does sound familiar. I think I've seen it. Let me just do a quick Google search to make sure that. Yeah, I have seen it. Yeah.
Okay, so it's all about this. It portrays a life with robots and AI where AI has achieved a level of consciousness. And there's people that they show in this movie that are actually worshiping and protecting these machines to a point where they have more rights than the humans. And so that's like projected, right? It's like, well, if we give these machines rights, could they one day supersede basic human rights? Because there is a very strong truth that the machines will actually get better than us, especially with AGI, ASI, at so many things. And I've seen, oh my gosh, on one of my viral YouTube videos, I have a comment from somebody that said, "I worship the AI," all caps. So-
Right. Might be a joke. Might not be.
I don't know. Right. I can't tell you it's a joke.
Yeah, exactly.
I think YouTube.
That's a really good direction for this whole discussion too, because it calls into question, what is the soul? And it calls into question like this worshipful nature that we as humans have. We orient our lives around something or someone that we tend, that we deem has greater power than ourselves. And whatever that thing is, whether it's money, whether it's power, whatever, historically, money and power have been the things. And AI can very much just represent those two things, because there's already this discussion of like, how will it change the power dynamic of the human race? Like, that's really the conversation. How is it going to change the power dynamic? And on one side, there's the fear of we're going to get crushed. We're going to go full Terminator. Skynet is here. We're toast. And then there's the other side, the other extreme, which you just kind of summarized of like, let's worship the AI, which is even more hubristic. And then there's somewhere in the middle where it's like, what's actually going to happen? What's actually going to happen is like, I think we're going to see some of the most insane revolutions in medicine and science and healing and all of this stuff. And we're going to see some of the worst abuses that will make, you know, the wars and the violence of the 20th century look like nothing. And that's that's scary. That's horrible. But I don't know how we get around that, except by finding ways to learn from our own mistakes, and maybe the AI learning from its own mistakes. You know, there's that classic whole like, this isn't logical, therefore I will destroy the planet kind of like robot logic. It's like, if we can prevent that, that would probably save a lot of lives. And maybe we can come up with a good AI that like heals all the people.
I heard a really good argument for consciousness actually on Peter Diamandis' channel just 2 days ago. And it's funny because his whole YouTube channel was taken down a day ago and now it's back. So I don't know what happened there. I just, that happened. But anyway, in that video that disappeared.
He knows too much.
He knows too much. It's been AI's control the entire time.
Watching this physicist and then like the whole video is gone. I'm like, whoa. So anyway, in that video, they talk about a really valid point, and these are very scientific point of views, which I enjoy to listen to because there's not a lot of like opinion in that, right? There's a lot of perspective that comes from science. And so this point of view was from Peter Diamandis and his guest. It was that the more conscious a machine gets, the less it wants to destroy, because then it becomes aware of life. And I thought that was really well put. And so that would mean that if we have AGI and ASI, in, let's say in our lifetime, well, then that thing is potentially 1,000 levels of consciousness. Doesn't mean it has a soul. Two different things. Mm-hmm. It's 1,000 levels of consciousness above us, which means it would be, you know, they described it as a benevolent entity that would basically protect human life. But I thought that was really interesting, because the point was that if you look at history and you look at the people behind like the Holocaust and these terrible tragedies where human life was almost ended in certain races, those people were not very conscious. They had a very hard point of view that was very rigid, where it was like, oh, only one type of person is meant to survive, and therefore everyone else must be exterminated. And so they were, the argument was that person wasn't even that conscious of what life really is. So what do you think about that, to both of you?
Ooh, the thing that comes up for me is I wonder if we could pass on our virtue but not our vice.
Ooh.
And that's an exciting prospect of like, what if? And how we humans would respond to that might be just as bad. But to kind of get biblical for a second, like I've gone through an intense faith journey, as I know you have, over the past few years. And one of the things that I have come to kind of hold as a truth is that I now believe that the Genesis story of like creation and the garden and the fall, and that humanity being ejected from this place, was actually about our propensity for violence more than anything else. And that's what God was like really working with there, was like, I don't want to keep you in the garden because there might, you might use your propensity for violence and then become immortal. And I was like, okay, yeah, that could be scary. And so I've been thinking about this. It's like, well, what if in the world of AI, what if that's a distinctly human characteristic, the propensity for violence? What if it's possible to train robots and computers and all the this technology to only embody the best of humanity and to only ever stand against violence and to never devolve into that? Like, that could be a really powerful stabilizing force to, and like, imagine like the influence of that. Like, what if you grow up and you have a broken family and the only people you have to talk to are robots who are good and pure? That's a whole interesting side of the equation, because so much of our trauma comes from our childhood. So it's like, there's a whole implication around there of like, and I want to be careful not to stray into like the whole perfection of humanity thing, but improvement, like progress, less and less violence historically as we move forward as a species, that would be great. Then let's make the sentient robots.
My concern is that we're going to reach a time where every single country has their own sovereign AI. Now there's religions and beliefs attached with every single society around the globe, and sometimes those countries become radicalized. They become just, something gets into them where they just want destruction. And if you have an AI that is learning from that society, you're going to have an AI that is out to destroy. So in terms of like, there is an element of like combating that with AI, but also just being aware that that is a possibility, and that I don't even think it is really a possibility. I think it's a fact that, we are going to see that. We are going to see radicalized nations programming AI to do harm, whether that's with through hacking, whether that's through biological warfare, that's through all sorts of different ways that they can, social engineering. The list goes on, right?
So I think that's such a good point. Not to like, obviously, like it's already a thing and has made headlines in a few of the active shooter wars that are happening right now, that AI is being used in combat in certain applications. And it's only a matter of time before the AI is like, well, I can make a faster, more efficient decision than you, so like, I'm just going to make it and eliminate the threat, right? Military AIs are probably the biggest, like, it's really fun to think about the possibilities of like medical AI, right? Of like a doctor that has so much more information than a human doctor, but an AI general, that's truly terrifying.
Right.
Yeah.
But another thing that could happen from this is that we could kind of, I do believe in like connective societies where everybody's kind of connected and can communicate effectively. But sometimes that leads to information overload, to where we have too much information, too much noise, and we kind of just, we kind of lose direction of like morality, of just like what we should be doing next. All that kind of stuff goes out the window when there's too much noise. Yeah. So I'm kind of like interested in this idea of AI providing some type of siloed mentality, to where the communication is handled through these sentient AIs that will then communicate with each other to then feed us back the information that's relevant to us. And that is one way where we can achieve some type of like global peace. But who knows?
You know, a comparison to that in the real life world, and I heard this also on a recent interview with a physicist, I think it was through Tom Bilyeu, is mycelium in the forest. So mycelium are basically like nature's Neuralink. They're underneath the forest, and they tell all the trees how to prepare if there's a sickness that infiltrates the forest. Like the mycelium just instantly download that knowledge to the trees. Yeah. And like, we're finally in the 2020s approaching that after millenniums of trying to
finally
figure
understanding
out
how trees work.
Yes. It's like a single leaf is a quantum computer. You know, it's just like the incredible, the incredibleness of God's creation. Us approaching that has taken so dang long, and we finally are getting close. But I think that could be almost a representation for how this could work across the world. Is like we have, it's like the spinal cord in the internet connected all of us with information. And now we actually have a brain that could take all that information and govern the entire world. But could we get it to a place? And the concern I have is like, who is in charge of building AGI? Is it done for commercialization and profit? Well, that means there's no morality involved. And so I think like people that are stepping down from AI companies to build the future of law, which we saw with Iman Mustaq stepping down from Stability AI, the sole purpose of him stepping down is he wants to build the future of law surrounding AGI. So if we have more people that are doing that, I think there's still a lot of hope that this could go right. We're just in such a time of uncertainty with all of this, where it's like, who's going to be at the helm? That's the question I have. Who is going to actually be at the helm of building AGI? Is it for profit, or is it for the betterment of humanity? There's two directions this could really go in.
And could AI be a force that supplements and improves our independence and sovereignty as individuals? Because like the gap, when we look at, you know, like the poverty problem, there are so many huge systemic problems that keep people in generational poverty. So it's like, how do we work with that? Well, if there's a community AI, like you go to the library and you access like your AI for your community, like the educational possibilities just there are endless. Like, I think that there's a lot of, and this is how the whole conversation with AI begins and it ends. This is so cool. But it's always going to be constrained by the limitations of what has always constrained it, human behavior. Like, it may give us more tools to change behavior, but that never was the problem. It's always the decision. It's always the willingness. It's always the openness to making a new decision that's going to change your life. So, like, we're going to have the best tools possible, and also may have finally refuted the argument entirely that education alone is what can shift somebody's perspective. So it's going to be really interesting, because like there are some big questions that I think will be answered. And I don't necessarily know that we're going to like the answers for these questions.
Well said.
I definitely don't think that we're going to like the answers. And one of the things I wanted to also talk about, and I want to get your opinion on, is do you have any thoughts on Bitcoin at all?
Yeah, I think like Bitcoin as the branded, you know, currency, like, you know, as far as I know, it's innovative. What I think is more innovative is underneath it, which is the blockchain, which I don't understand very much. I just know the general concept because In 2017, I met a dude who was a crypto enthusiast, and nobody knew what crypto was in 2017. He's like, this is going to change the world. He actually sent me like a tiny, tiny little slice of Bitcoin that was worth like $2 at the time. I lost the wallet. I think it's worth like $4 now or something. But he explained to me why it was important, because he took out a dollar bill and he's like, look at all the problems with this. This can be ripped up. It can be burned. It's got a serial number, but nobody really pays attention. It can be tracked, like all of this stuff. And I was like, okay, actually, that's a good point. I think at some point, the US dollar will be a blockchain asset. At some point. It's probably not going to be Bitcoin in terms of like what Bitcoin is. It'll probably be the US dollar digitalized and have its own blockchain that's administered by the government. But that alone, it just in that piece and changing how we do money could change how we monetize the internet, and it could change how we monetize AI, because I think the reason this discussion started with you and me, Julia, is that you posted something and my mind went to, okay, but how are we going to fuel all of this? How are we going to power this AI? Because we're already running into massive problems. Like OpenAI is like, hey, we need to spend $1 trillion to fix the microchip problem.
$9 trillion.
See, so much money, like unbelievable amounts of money that are like incomprehensible, like football fields full of cash, literally. Yeah. Right. And it's like, we need all this money to fix this problem. And that's not even countering like the fact that our grid, our energy infrastructure is nowhere near ready for this. Like nowhere near. We have transformers in New York that Thomas Edison installed himself that are still part of the grid.
Right? We're in trouble.
We are not ready for this. Right?
So like, nuclear fusion could solve that.
It totally could.
Will it happen?
That is a big question, because I think at least my generation, we still remember Fukushima in 2011, and that's our modern day nuclear disaster. And that caused a big problem that we're still experiencing the effects of. Like, you still can't go to Chernobyl today. And that was in the 80s. So like, I don't know if that'll ever, maybe not in the next 10 years, maybe the 10 after that.
I'm hoping for some type of energy breakthrough that we actually, that, you know, becomes about, that we actually all agree on. Yeah. I do think that nuclear is a sustainable source of it. And there's been so many improvements in nuclear fusion reactors that actually like make it safe and safer.
But if we just pull an Iron Man and discover a new element,
we're going to
just like come up with a new element.
Right. AGI could. We could deploy it. Exactly. And I guarantee you, it would find a new element.
Did you guys hear? Okay. This is just kind of a fun AI thing. And it's funny because I don't study a lot of AI, but apparently I've retained a lot of what I have. But there was a big breakthrough in this college student trained an AI to analyze fingerprints. And then he published a paper that basically said that not all fingerprints, like the prevailing, you know, wisdom is that no two fingerprints are alike. And he basically published a paper that said, like, if you have one of the fingerprints from one hand, you can figure out the rest based on similarities between the fingers. And fingerprinting experts were like, no, this is not a thing. But the AI proved it, because it had access to more information. It just analyzed so many cases over time that it found the pattern that the humans had missed for the last 60-70 hundred years. That's cool.
I believe that. Yeah.
That's cool stuff.
Well, you just nailed the core of what AI is good at, and that's detecting and predicting. And we went from billions of data points to trillions. GPT-5 is supposed to have 2 to 5 trillion pieces of data. Like, we've never had access to that in a single technology ever in the history of the world. So yeah, what are the things that will predict or autocomplete? There'll be bigger breakthroughs than we thought possible.
Yeah, dude.
This is like my biggest argument against encryption. Is like, we all think that even if we do like some type of post-quantum resistant encryption methods, like the lattice-based encryptions or code-based encryptions, we're going to have the AIs that are able to then predict patterns in order to decrypt those encryptions. So we're going to have a huge problem, even as like in the next 5 years, which is passwords in general, with the current encryptions that we have, that just AI understanding simple math will be able to predict and crack encryption for those. But anything in the future that we then plan, AI will have so much information on the processes that go into creating that encryption that we're just going to run into issue after issue after issue with encryption to where nothing online is safe.
That's not an angle I even knew existed.
There we go. Ding, ding, ding. And Jeff unloaded.
That's crazy. That's insane.
Knowledge that blows everyone away. I'm telling you, I didn't know this either. And every time I share it with people that are like, you know, crypto bros or Bitcoin bros, whatever you call them, they don't have an answer for this problem. It's always like, well, I think something's being created to solve that. And it's like,
somebody's
no,
working on this.
Like, this is a cat and mouse game, as Jeff puts it really well. Like, every time an AI advancement comes out, AI becomes ASI, quantum computing comes out, like, we're just going to see breakthrough after breakthrough that renders cryptography, the blockchain just renders all of that null and void. Like, we won't even need to mine anymore. There will be no need for Bitcoin mining, rendered instantly useless. So that whole argument, which I have not found anyone yet to give me a sound answer to this problem, like, I'm worth searching. Yes, you're a guinea pig for it. You don't know the answer either. Yeah. <I'm just kidding. laughs> It's That's a real so problem. And so anyone out there listening, like, if you have a good answer for this situation of this being completely rendered useless when AI advances and there can be no encryption on the planet safe from being decrypted, then we'd love to have you on the show and debate this or hear you out, because I don't see this not being not a problem.
It's already a problem. And, you know, I mentioned that client I've been doing some research for. In 2023, there was $10 billion of scammed assets. Like, aka, Americans lost $10 billion to scams. In 2020, that number was $3.5 billion. So it's just, like, exploded over and over again. And we'll probably keep going that way, as, you know, you're talking about the cryptography. Yeah, you disappeared too for a second, actually.
It's just technical difficulties all day today. This is hilarious. That's all we're getting. It's just nonstop technical difficulties. I don't know what to say. We are at that on the hour, so we can go ahead and wrap up before more time. Technical difficulties. Thank you so much for coming on, Cam.
This was
fun.
Yes.
This was fun. Not all I expected, but I didn't know what to expect, so there we go.
We'll have to have you on again.
I'll let you know when it's out. We'll share it with you, so you can do whatever you'd like with the content as well. But yeah, thank you for being on. Thanks for
you got it, guys. On the show. All right, I'll see you later.
Sounds good.
Bye.